This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Howdy, third hour coming to you live from the Tiki and Tierney Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studio. Millions of Americans finance the home of their dreams. With their help, they can help you as well. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Obviously, a lot of football. By the way, that's our bad. We totally omitted as we talked about the possibility of the Redskins trying to make a move for Mike Tomlin. I don't know why this would really matter from the Redskins' point of view, but the Steelers obviously gave up their first round pick in Minkah Fitzpatrick. Mm-hmm. We got a few tweets on that. We didn't really throw that into the part of the conversation.
Yeah.
I don't know that we needed to, but
yeah, but I mean, if the Steelers wanted to get a first round pick back, they could get one by trading Mike Tomlin.
They can definitely do
which
that.
May or may not be worth it.
There's always a way to get around that, and the draft equity, we've seen that movement. Younger executives, mm-hmm. they're a little more open to that. You know, Lock and Four has been saying for a long time, we're going to see a lot of in-season trades because it's a different philosophy. A lot of different philosophies in baseball last 5, 7, 10 years as well. We're joined now by David Sampson. And David, CBS Sports HQ Major League Baseball analyst, former Miami, Florida Marlins executive, and he's got a new project that I believe is going to announce it for the first time right now on the show. David, what's happening, buddy? How you been?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Doing well. Man. What do you have brewing, man? Yeah. What's the new deal here?
Well, starting on October 14th, there's a new show coming out. It's called Nothing Personal with David Sampson. It's a 45-minute nice. Audio and video podcast where I'm going to talk about sports, and I'm going to give all the listeners really insight because over 18 years, I've had a chance to see a lot of things and do a lot of things. So I'm going to try to decode all of the mysteries that surround trending sports stories, and I'm going to really tell it like it is.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be brutally honest. It's going to be funny. It's going to be interesting. And I think the CBS bosses are going to be watching carefully because I'm going to talk about a lot of different things.
Nice. Well, let me ask you. That's awesome.
Where can we find this, David? It's obviously a week or so away, but where can we find it?
So starting Monday the 14th, you can download it wherever you get your podcasts every day for your afternoon drive home.
Mm-hmm.
And then starting the 21st, if you watch CBS Sports HQ, from 3 to 3:30, you can see me doing the show. And if you want the full 45-minute video show, it'll be available on the YouTube channel on CBSSports.com. And so it's going to be available pretty much everywhere, video and or audio. And it should be exciting, called Nothing Personal, because at the end of the day, guys, it really is just business for me. It's definitely nothing personal.
It's not but how did you not name it Wait to See? I mean, that's what you're known for in the hashtag world. How is it not called Wait to See?
So there'll be a segment, Wait to See. There will be segments because one of the things that I don't like is the lack of accountability. When I ran the Marlins, there were people in the media who were saying things, and they really didn't have information. And then when they turned out to be wrong, they would not go back and say they were wrong. So I'm going to keep track of things that I say. And when I'm wrong, I'm going to say it, and I'm going to acknowledge it because I'm not always right. When I was running a team, I wasn't always right. And now on the media side doing the show, I won't always be right. It's not like correcting the errors like other shows do.
Yeah.
It's when I say that things are going to happen and they don't, it's a wait to see. And then we waited and then we saw and I was either right or wrong.
I like it. Accountability. That's a good scoreboard. So David Sampson is with us. Good luck on the project, man. Happy that you announced it here. It sounds interesting. You're a smart guy. You're a good follow on social media. Former executive of the Marlins. I know we're going to start talking baseball now. Tiki's
yeah.
with us here on the show.
You know, David, we have an interesting matchup happening tonight in Houston against the Tampa Bay Rays. It's down in Tampa Bay, and it's basically Justin Verlander versus the bullpen for Tampa Bay. That's how it's going to work out, it looks like. But Justin Verlander is pitching on 3 days' rest, which BT, you know, agrees with this because it gives him a chance to potentially pitch game one if they should close out tonight against the Yankees.
And at least certainly game two at the minimum.
In the ALCS. I mean, are you okay with this philosophy? We were because he's 36 years old. He knows his body. He's not going to let himself get into trouble. But what do you think about this for the Houston Astros?
So I'll tell you guys a story. I was waiting online with Jack McKeon and the rest of the team in 2003. He was our manager, and we were flying to New York, and we hadn't decided whether Mark Redmond would start Game 6 or Josh Beckett would start Game 6 on short rest. And I said, Jack, what are you thinking about? How are you thinking about this? And he said, Sparky, and that was my nickname. He said, Sparky, you want to win? Then we're going Beckett. And I said, well, don't you want to save him for a Game 7? He said, absolutely not. Forget that. Forget tomorrow. We want to win today. I'm going with my best. My best is Beckett, period. And we loved Mark Redmond. He helped us get to the playoffs, mm-hmm. but he had not had a particularly great postseason. And Beckett had pitched great in the LCS. And he said, there's no discussion. And he said, Sparky, you try to talk me out of it, you might as well not come to the game because Josh Beckett's starting Game 6.
That was a tough World Series for my boys. I'm not going to lie to you, Dad. I thought that was going to be a breeze, man. You know, after what the Yankees, you know, win it in 96, mm-hmm. win it in 98, win it in 99, win it in 2000, lose on a broken bat, base hit up the middle with Mo against Arizona in 2001. I'm like, finally, a World Series I don't have to really sweat yeah. through. We got the Marlins coming in, and they danced on our turf, that's for sure. David Sampson is with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Listen, in totality, while the Yankees, their defense last night was phenomenal, I believe, like many do, the Astros are a better baseball team based on their starting rotation. But if this thing goes to five and the Yankees can clearly, they can set up their rotation, their bullpen, is which is already relatively rested with Chapman, I think this is, I don't want to say the only way for the Yankees to maybe steal this series if the Astros advance, but probably their best shot. Because if the Astros come in lined up with their rotation, I think the Astros beat them.
Well, really what happens is if they do go five, you're going to have Greinke starting Game 1, and then you're going to go back to Verlander and Cole in 2 and 3, and then you're going to have Cole lined up to start a Game 7 instead of Greinke, mm-hmm. who if the rotation lines up perfectly, it would be Verlander, Cole, Greinke, and then Greinke again in 7 potentially. So I don't mind for the Astros having their rotation backwards, as a matter of fact.
Interesting.
And thinking back to the 03 World Series, both rotations were backwards by the time they made it to the World Series, both the Yankees and the Marlins, and that's not the real factor. The issue for the Yankees is going to be they've got to get more innings out of their starters, and they, in a five-game series, they got away with it by sweeping the Twins, but they've got to win 8 more games out of the next 14 is how I'm looking at it. So they just have to go 8-6, but they're going to need more outs from the rotation.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. The Washington Nationals, who play tomorrow night, in Game 5, the closeout series against the Los Angeles Dodgers. Look, they lose Bryce Harper this offseason. It felt like, you know, it was going to be a down year. It obviously wasn't. They win the wild card. They've taken 2 from the Dodgers already. I mean, how overachieving is this Washington Nationals squad, where the expectation wasn't nearly this at the beginning of the year?
Well, I think I may have been on your show when I said that by losing Harper, it was actually addition by subtraction. So I believe from the beginning the Nationals were going to be a better team without Harper in the lineup and without him in the clubhouse.
Why would you say that, David? I remember you did say that, but why did you think that?
Because my experience and my view of him is that it just wasn't working in Washington. If you look at how much they underperformed with the team they had over the years, Harper just wasn't helpful enough to them. And look what happened in Philadelphia. They were supposed to be great this year. They're my number one disappointment of the season, with the Red Sox being number 2 and the Padres number 3. But look what happened with the Phillies. They spent stupid money, according to their owner. They brought in JT Realmuto, the best catcher in the game, the biggest free agent, Bryce Harper. And they just were not able to get it done at all. They were a 500 team. Now look at the Nationals. They kept Rendon, and they may get to sign him. They may not. They signed Patrick Corbin, which gives them 3 great starters, and Strasburg has been pitching for money, which is a not all players can step up when they're pitching for money or playing for money, and he certainly has. So the Nationals are a deep team. They have a 21-year-old who's like Miguel Cabrera when he was 21 and Juan Soto. I'm not sure where the holes are with the Nationals, but I'll tell you, all the pressure tomorrow is on L.A. My God, they must be so tight right now, they can't breathe.
Yeah, it's palpable, no doubt. You mentioned Soto. We talked about that, obviously, the next day when he ripped that base hit to right field against Josh Hader. Pure filth coming in from the left side against the lefty. I mean, that shoulder was locked in. The mechanics were flawless. I agree. He is a great young player. But I would question Rendon. Listen, I mean, I know he's a really good player. He's a doubles machine. He's a good fielder. I know he's good. 7 years, 215. The guy doesn't sell tickets. He only had a lot of home runs this year because the ball is jacked up. I mean, if you're running the Marlins and you had the money to spend, Would that seem like a wise offer? 7 years, $215 million for Rendon?
No, I don't think any player's worth it. You know, we signed Stan to that big deal because we were the Marlins and we had never really had a franchise player stay with the team. We wanted him to be on our Mount Rushmore of Marlins players. We wanted him to retire a Marlin. We were hoping for the first time in the history of the franchise through all the different ownerships that we'd have a player who would stay. So we offered him a deal he couldn't refuse. But again, he was willing to do that. He had just been hit in the face with a pitch,
yeah,
as you recall, and he hadn't even come back yet. So we made it impossible for him to say no. Rendon, I think you're underselling him. He's a top defensive player, and he is an outstanding offensive player, gap to gap. The home runs are a bonus. And for me, the reason why he said no is that his agent, it's the usual, right? When you have Boris as an agent, you're not saying yes to anything during the season unless it's so out of whack, like with Strasburg, where there's a concern of injury and lack of performance that you take the money offered during the season or before you need to. But Rendon's going to test the market. And what I can't wait to talk about with you guys offseason is when we hear from Boris the same thing we heard last offseason, which is Bryce Harper is the greatest offensive game changer in the game, because now you're going to take out Harper's name and insert Rendon's name. And then when he signs, you'll insert J.D. Martinez's name. So I can't keep track of who the best player is anymore.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I want to challenge you. I don't think I'm underselling Rendon at all. I gave him his due. You know, terrific with the leather, big-time doubles, back-to-back. I believe it was 43 and 44. He led the league in doubles. I know he's terrific. But, David, he's going to be 30. And, you know, not that 30 is old, but to start attaching 7 years to somebody who's 30 is not a wise move. And more than that, you've got to be able to have the money that you're giving him, you know, come back to you. I don't. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't think people are running to the will call saying, you know, I got to go watch Anthony Rendon. Say what you will about Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper sold tickets. Anthony Rendon doesn't sell tickets.
Yeah, Bryce Harper didn't sell nearly enough tickets. I can't think of any player who sells enough tickets in order to make a $30 million salary make sense. What you hope when you have a guy making that much is that you make the postseason, you get incremental revenue that way along with the asset appreciation that you get, and that's how you can explain it to your owner. But you're right. I wouldn't offer Rendon 7, 210, 215.
Okay.
I don't see how he gets better than that. I would not offer him more than 3 years because the premium on young players, there will be another Rendon. And Juan Soto, as an example, is probably better than Rendon.
Yes.
And they're going to want to sign him. There's always the next guy up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why teams like Tampa interest me and Oakland. They're forced to be smart. They're forced not to sign these type of deals because they can't afford to. So they have protection from themselves. And that's something that larger market teams don't get, that protection.
Yeah.
And they make these signings that feel so good during the offseason, and then they feel so bad after that.
Yeah, you win the day, and then you're stuck with a price tag that nobody wants to be stuck with. David Sampson is with us. By the way, if you just tuned in, he just dropped his new project. It's called Nothing Personal with David Sampson, a daily show. It's going to be on CBS Sports HQ, a video audio podcast. Of course, former executive with the Marlins. You see him on Le Batard all the time. And what day does the show drop again?
October 14th, next Monday, the audio drops wherever you download your podcast. October 21st, it starts the video on CBS Sports HQ.
I love it.
Hey, David, so yesterday the Braves had a chance to close out their series against the Cardinals, and up by a run, they had the bases loaded twice, and the Cardinals were able to get out of that situation. It feels like the Braves are the, you know, quote, better team, but they lose one, and now the series is tied. Now, how deflating is that for this team, and really how encouraged should the Cardinals be?
Well, this series has been back and forth. We predicted a five-game series from the beginning, and you've seen the Cardinals' bullpen blow a save. You saw Flaherty not able to get a victory, which is shocking given that he's been probably the best National League pitcher in the second half for a team playing meaningful games. So I'm eliminating DeGrom from that conversation, really, except for maybe a week or two when they were in it. So, you know, what's deflating is when you lose and you know that you're facing Flaherty and you're counting on Foltynewicz to match what he did in Game 2. And I'm trying to think of the last time he had two starts in a row that were as good as his last start was in the DS. You know, seven innings, his slider was a knockout, knee-buckling, impossible to hit. Oh, my God, this is an ace type of slider. And not every time that you walk out of the bullpen, if you're Foltynewicz, do you have that in your arsenal? And that, to me, is what should concern Atlanta.
All right, we got about 30 seconds, maybe a little more. Number one, did Mickey Callaway get unjustly fired? And number two, not who should they hire, who do you think they actually hire?
Here's what happens when you have a problem with the team and a new general manager. Brody Van Wagenen is not going to fire himself. and the Wilpons say, listen, a change has to be made. It's either you or the manager. Let me know which you prefer.
Yeah.
And so, of course, it's going to be Callaway. And the problem is now, whoever's the next manager, there's no more line of defense before BVW gets it if the Mets have another bad year. So it's going to be interesting to see who they choose. And I think it's going to be an argument in the front office between a younger, analytic, cheaper manager versus one of the established veterans who's out there, like a Girardi or a Showalter, who's going to have a price tag of $4 to $5 million, where now managers are really only making $1 million, 500 grand to $1 million, and they're young guys with no experience. The problem is their GM has no experience. So it's not like the Cubs where you could hire David Ross and be okay because you have Theo. The Mets do need someone to really help Brody, and I think Showalter could be that guy because he's got the gravitas and he's run a team. He knows what to do on the field and off the field. And frankly, from a window standpoint, people get sick of Showalter after 4 years, let's say.
Yeah.
And the Mets have 4 years right now with that rotation where, in theory, they could be good.
Hey, listen, congrats on the new project. Nice baseball conversation. David Sampson, formerly of the Marlins, part of the CBS family. Congrats, man. Happy for you. Good job.
Hey, thank you, guys. We'll speak again soon. Appreciate it.
Be good, Dave.
And wait to see, buddy. We'll wait to see. On that. Thanks, David. Thanks, man. He's rapid fire.
He's good.
He's rapid fire.
Knows his stuff, too.
Oh,
man.
He definitely does. He's piped in. You know, I've said Buck Showalter as well. I almost prefer Buck over Joe, and I like Joe Girardi a lot. I don't know if the Mets are going to spend that kind of money. They might go the cheap way, but I really hope they don't because they're really ready to win.
Yeah, you're
they're
right.
ready to
and it
win.
It felt like in his last point about having a GM with no experience, and then a Skip who was young with no experience. It's a bad combination when you're ready to win.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it felt like with the Mets. It's not prudent for them to walk down that path again.
Hmm.
So we'll see.
Mets fans are waiting. Coming up next, is it really Yankees, Astros, or I should probably say Astros, Yankees, and everybody else? Is that true? We'll have that conversation coming up. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 1-855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way to save money. Switch to Geico. Just go to geico.com and at 15 minutes save 15% or more on car insurance. So good stuff with David Sampson. Always a fun, spirited conversation. Guy obviously knows his stuff. Look at this from a big picture, kind of parachute into the October setup here for the baseball. And the one thing I was thinking about this last night watching the Yankees. I was going back and forth, the Yankees and the 49ers and the Browns, obviously. You know, the Yankees either open, and this is just a byproduct of being the Yankees. The Yankees either enter October completely overhyped, or they're so stacked that they're expected to win it, and that comes with an immense burden.
Yeah.
This Yankees team is somewhere in between.
Yeah, it's unique because they're
which I think is good for them.
I think you're right.
Like, almost frees them up a little bit.
Well, it makes them not, like, I don't know, get tight.
That's what I mean.
Like, as David Sampson was just talking about with the Dodgers. The Dodgers have to be feeling anxious as hell right now. This series shouldn't have been to five. Shouldn't have gotten this far. Because when you look at the roster.
By the way, I told you.
I know you
did. That stat line was pretty damn close to what I predicted.
You looked at their rotation, and yeah, I know the Nationals have a good rotation as well, but not nearly as deep as the Dodgers. Then you look at the position players and the guys. I mean, they crushed home runs. It was the first game of the season. Didn't they hit like 10 home runs or something like that?
Yeah, I think it was 10 or 11. I think it may have even been 11, actually.
It was ridiculous.
I remember that.
Yeah,
that was nuts.
So you look at this Dodgers team since like pitch one, we expected them to get back to the World Series, and now here they are sitting in an elimination game. That's not, you know, it's probably not going to be easy for them. In contrast, the Yankees, like the injuries that overtook the narrative for a lot of this season, the IL, all these guys. I mean, a Major League Baseball record of guys on the injured list, kind of like tamped down the hype in a sense because it was like, okay, yeah, they lost, but this guy's hurt, this guy's hurt, this guy's hurt. Maybe he'll come back, but we don't know. And then you looked at the rotation, and all those guys get hurt, and then you get a guy suspended because of a domestic violence issue. And it's like all of these, the overhype for a team that almost, you know, broke their own record in home runs. What'd they lose by, one?
The Yankees?
Yeah, one.
No, I thought they established it.
No, I think they
and
lost.
And the Twins were second.
I think the Twins were first. I think, you got to check it.
Twins were second.
But whatever it is, they crush home runs. Mm-hmm. Didn't matter who was in the lineup, and their rotations are just good enough.
And right? They catch the baseball better than people think.
That's right.
And we said that at the start of the show.
Except for when they have Stanton in left field.
Yeah, that's true. He's a little creaky out there. Actually, he's very creaky out there. They made some plays last night. The four that jump out, the Torres playing short right on the grass, which was the stop, and then the ensuing pick by DJ LeMahieu, who, by the way, has got to be the biggest bargain. 2 years, $20 million. Yeah. I don't know what the Rockies. I was watching the game with my dad on Friday, and my dad must have said three times, what were the Rockies thinking? Or what were other teams around baseball thinking that didn't jump in and maybe say, I mean, DJ, he's had his best year in terms of power, yeah, for sure. No, he's always been a high average guy.
Of course.
High on base guy. He's a professional, yep, hitter.
He was in the MVP conversation for a lot of the season.
He'll still finish top 10.
Yeah, you're right.
Maybe top 7.
By the way,
so.
Twins 307, Yankees 306.
They got him by one. So I look at the Yankees defense, but then I still think the Dodgers, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was thinking about this last night because I did say, I think the stat line, I think I said 8 innings, maybe 10 or 11 whiffs, yep, something like that. Something like a run and 3 hits. I was an inning short, a couple of strikeouts short, but I think I was on with the hits and the runs. Mm-hmm. But I tell you, I even surprised myself a little bit because as I thought about this, I got in the car last. I'm saying, when I heard the Dodgers starting lineup, I said, I'm not surprised by this. They're going with 7 lefties, 7 of the 9 lefties. And Max Scherzer's wipeout pitch is a slider.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very reluctant, and all the stats bear this out, he's very reluctant to throw that because the slider's breaking into the lefty stick. And if you miss by an inch, boom, especially to the Dodgers. It's like putting on a tee, playing wiffle ball. And he was still really sharp. If the Nationals, I know this is going to sound crazy, if the Nationals win tomorrow, if they can win, mm-hmm, and advance, the Nationals can win the World Series. The Nationals could win the World Series.
Interesting. I wouldn't have thought of that.
I think there's multiple teams. I think the Dodgers obviously can if they get their act together. I think the Yankees can. I know the Astros can. I think the Braves can.
I wouldn't be surprised by anything. Let's put it this way. Because I feel like the Yankees, and maybe I'm biased, but I feel like the Yankees could win it, but I wouldn't be surprised if they get knocked out. Right?
With the Astros.
With the Astros.
No, I wouldn't either.
Because the Astros are so good. But when you look at how the Yankees played the Dodgers, when you had a Cy Young quality, maybe even the winner in the National League in Hyunjin Ryu, who's not going to walk you but throw you a pitch and say, hit it out of the ballpark, the Yankees hit it out of the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though they're playing the Astros and have a better rotation, if they can get ahead in counts, and they've been really good at getting ahead in counts, they might be banging home runs off the Astros too. It's nothing is going to surprise me this postseason in MLB because all these teams have strengths. They all have weaknesses at times, and everyone seems vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only team that I didn't believe had a shot was the Twins. And if they had won game one, maybe I would have changed my tune on that. But after they couldn't squeeze that one closer and the Yankees ran away from them,
yeah,
you knew it was over. But other than that, all these other teams, you feel like have a shot.
They do, because they all have an ace. They all have, multiple stars. And the Twins scored the first run in the,
yep,
first game.
Yep.
In the first inning.
Yep.
Going back to game one of the DS here. So, the Yankees own the Twins. We know that. Twins had a really good season. They planted some seeds for success there. It looks like they have a pretty good manager, although he, mm-hmm, was thoroughly outmanaged, I thought, by Aaron Boone. And I remember saying right before the wild card games, the only thing that would really surprise me, with all due respect, I just didn't think the Rays or the A's had the horses to make an extended run. The fact that the Rays didn't go down to the broom and they showed, mm-hmm, a little resilience at home, hit a couple of home runs, jumped on them early, they actually routed them. That speaks to their organizational character. Can they win again? I mean, the bullpen is tricky. I mean, that's a tough way to have to. You're on pins. As the manager, you're in pins and needles the, yeah, whole game. I mean, from the first pitch.
Yeah, but at least you know that the hook is not something you're waiting for.
You, right? Mean so you can just tax it out?
No. I'm talking about because who's actually starting the game tonight for the Rays? Do we know? I know they're starting in the bullpen, but
Diego Castillo.
So Castillo's starting.
8 guys pitch tonight.
Well, that's my point. So it's not like if Castillo goes, he gives up, two runs in the first inning. He's not like, I got to wait and see. Can you figure it out? You going to work yourself out of this thing?
Yeah, you don't have time to. We're next.
It's like next.
Train's moving.
Next. So
but I'm also not
it gets
a big,
dangerous. But
I'm also not a big believer of just being married to that bullpen by committee. If you come out and you put up, Ack, what do you think in their mind right now is the max amount of pitches they want for Castillo? Like, as they envision, as they blueprint this game, as they map this out.
I'm going to say,
you think two
I'm
or three.
30 to 35.
So they're thinking two plus. If he has 30 to 35, if he has a quick first inning, or even a quick second count. But you could stretch out three. You could go 10-plus mm-hmm. an inning. You could get through three. To me, I'd have to see how it looks and how the misses and how the contact is going. But even if they're married to 35 pitches or three frames, if he's got a couple of zeros up there, or if you're winning 4-2, whatever.
Yep, let him roll.
And, yeah, they have a blue bat, broken bat base hit that scored a run. I might trot him out there.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to just be married to this. You can't be overly rigid. You have to let your eyes tell the story. But, yeah, also, you could get burned if you wait a little bit too long. So this will be fun. I think that, man, I tell you, I want to see the Rays at some point in a stadium where I know that place gets loud. I understand that. I want to see the Rays play one day on the water, 40,000, well, probably be smaller than that, 32,000 people sold out, beautiful ballpark on the water. And I want to see what the Rays deserve more than they get. They really do. Yeah. They really, they're such a good franchise. And
look, we like their skip. We've had him won a couple of times, Kevin Cash. The one mistake I would say he made is in game one, when Glasnow was on the mound, he was pitching a gym, and he went high. We were actually watching it.
Yep.
He went high on Jose Altuve.
On Altuve.
And Altuve took him yard.
Uh-huh.
He pulled him immediately and then got into the bullpen, I think probably an inning too early.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had the error in right field, short right field, the second baseman. It was just it got away from him. But Glasnow was pitching so well, he missed one pitch.
You know, it's funny you bring that up, and I thought about that too. The only reason why I think they yanked him right after that, not the byproduct, not the home run where he missed. He missed in such an unforgivable place for a pitcher.
Yeah.
At the letters to Altuve, who's 5'7" at the left. I can see. Now, I also see your point of view. It was an ugly miss if you want to really
It's at the letters of a 6-foot guy. For a 5'7 guy, it was actually high.
Yeah, but you got to adjust.
Went up for that one. He was on his tippy toes when he hit that one out. So.
He smashed that one. We were on the air when he hit that. He turned that one around quick. So, bottom line is, everybody's got a chance. I mean, the Braves, by the way, Acuna, he posed again a little bit, but then he hustled. He made a triple out of it.
Yeah, he did.
When is he going to learn? Just go right away.
That one, I give him a little bit of a pass because he looked like he jammed his hand or something.
Yeah.
He has that, whatever that thing is, it holds your thumb and whatever. He was, like, holding his hand. He looked up. He's like, oh, crap, hit the wall, right? And
was going through his head as he was raising? He must be like, oh, man, I better make sure I get there. He flies. He absolutely flies.
I mean, he wasn't getting an inside-the-park home run, so, I mean, the triple is good enough.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take it.
All right, coming up next, a little blast for you. The Knicks might be going back to thug ball. We saw a little bit of that last night. And the Bills giving up on a second-round pick. Was it too early? We'll hit that in the Blast After Acts update, which is right now. Here's Rich Ackerman. All right, Tiki and Tierney back here on a pretty busy Tuesday. CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. We'll get to the Blast in a moment. First up, though, it is time for the Player of the Week. It's brought to you by Grainger. Taking a look at the one who got it done this week. It is Will Fuller. He can still run. Spoiler alert. The Texans wideout had a monster outing Sunday at home against the Falcons. He caught 14 passes for 217. He torched the Falcons secondary. Fuller also hauled in his first three touchdowns of the season. And the Texans have a tough test this week as they battle Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, taking on the Chiefs. Player of the Week brought to you by Grainger. Granger's got your back when it comes to the safety and industrial supplies that keep your facility running. Get what you need when you need it. Go to Grainger.com. All right, so before we get to the Blast here, I did have the Browns last night, although there was a little confusion. I originally had the 49ers on Friday, but I did take the Browns. That's on me. So I went 4-2 last week with our picks, and I am 18-12 on the season, 60% on the button. Teak had a little bit of a bounce back, 4-2, and Tiki is at, well, rounded up 37%. So obviously, Teak wants to get going, but coming off a 4-2 week, and here we are, week 6 around the NFL. The smart money seems to go against the Giants this Thursday. I don't know how they muster up anything. Do you think Barkley plays?
I mean,
they've been a little coy with that.
I wouldn't play him.
I wouldn't either at this point. And I would have, but not now.
They are so beat up.
Yep, not worth it now.
It's not worth it. I mean, you're going to end up handing the ball off to him, 35 times, and it's not going to be worth it. The question is Wayne Gallman even playing? Because he went out with concussion.
I don't know.
They got so many injury issues to deal with right now.
What is that line up to, 17? What's the Pats-Giants line?
It's got to be
got to be three scores.
It's got to be creeping up there, especially after Evan Ingram hit the injury report.
Yep. He's still checking. He's got, what is it, an AC joint? He hurt his shoulder, right?
Yeah, and then, I mean.
Sterling Shepard's out.
Yep.
What's the number?
16.5.
16.5. Oof. All right, T, you ready to blast away, buddy?
Yep, let's go.
Here we go.
So many topics, so little time. We give you 5 stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for the Blast with Tiki and Tierney.
All right, Vince Bowen, Marcus Morris was ejected in a preseason game against the Wizards last night for deliberately hitting Justin Anderson on the head with the ball. Basically, he was like, he's like a 3-point, you know, getter. And then
he almost hit him with an elbow before that, too, by the way.
And just, boom, he just bopped him on the head there. Should he face a suspension?
No, I mean, he didn't, like, throw a punch at him, and it's a preseason. Mm-hmm. Should it be fine? Yeah, of course. And kicked out of the game? Absolutely. But suspension? No, it's a preseason.
Here's this.
It's funny because it's almost like you're being pesky as hell, Justin Anderson, who obviously comes from a great defensive pedigree, University of Virginia, and Tony Bennett system, as we all know. But it's funny. You know what I mean?
What a disrespectful move.
But man. It's kind of funny.
I think it's hysterical. And I love that he's trying to set this tone. He keeps saying the Knicks aren't going to take any trash this year. We'll see. By the way, it just came down. He will not get suspended for the regular season opener. There was a thought that he obviously might. He'll take a little bang in the pocket. No big deal. I like him trying to set the tone. I mean, it's definitely...
Yeah, they got a weird roster this year.
They do. A lot of guys on one-year contracts or one plus the one with the Knicks having the option. I actually think, I mean, based on where they've been, it's not... It should be an improvement. When you missed all the big-time free agents, I actually think their offseason plan was relatively sound. And Marcus Morris is going to start up. He's a tough guy, so we'll see. All right, the Angels are reportedly interested in Joe Maddon for their managerial vacancy. Should the Angels have let Maddon leave the building? They interviewed him yesterday without offering him the job. It depends. If you didn't hear everything that you wanted to hear, then you're not going to bolt the door down. The fact that they let him walk tells me that there's some mixed signals. There's some strong reservations. There's some conflicting thoughts as to what they should do, which direction. I like Joe, and I would interview Joe for any opening, you know, but maybe he didn't knock it out of the park.
Yeah, I hear you. And he is old school, and they're not they just left that in a sense. So did they want to kind of go the other way? The question is Joe Maddon the right guy for this roster? You look at guys like Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. I'd say yeah, because he's such a personable like skip in that locker room, and guys would gravitate towards him. He'd set a culture. Obviously, he has great respect, but I think they might go younger, and it might be the better thing to do, despite how good I think the job he would do.
Well, this didn't work out. The Bills, they trade former second-round pick Zay Jones to the Raiders. This was an odd trade.
Yeah, third year in already.
Third year in. East Carolina, played for the Pirates, right?
Yep, right.
Fifth-round pick. Did the Bills give up on Zay Jones too quickly?
No.
My answer is no.
No.
You and I were talking about this during the I think it's your turn. Go ahead, T.
Yeah, but you know it.
You found the information. It's all good.
This kid is a drop machine.
Yeah.
He had 8 drops already this season. He only played 1 snap last week's game, and look, he's talented. He's big. He's like 6'4 and 220 pounds. He looks the part, but he had too many drops. His catch percentage his first year was like 34%.
And what's the average about? 68,
and then it went
69?
Up to 68 or 69, close to 70 is what you would say is good. His second year, he went up to 54.5%. This year, it's back down to 38%.
Oh, my good God.
It's just horrendous. You're not reliable. But for the Oakland Raiders, who are desperate for big-time receiving help. Not that he's going to be big-time, but they need receiving help because Tyrell Williams is out with a foot injury. J.J. Nelson is also out. Last week in that upset win over the Bears over in London, Derek Carr completed 25 passes. 7 of them went to wide receivers. The rest were tight ends and running backs.
Not a good percentage.
Not at all, man. So they needed help.
A body. Yeah.
Exactly. More than anything, they needed a body.
And they've got a lot of draft equity from the Khalil Mack trade. And they've got a lot of things they could do here. So, I mean, I guess I would kick the tires. You know, it's one thing if you're like, well, he doesn't run precise routes or he's a little bit of a knucklehead. But if you're, and I'm not saying that that's the case, but at least I can almost reconcile that and say, well, hey, at least he catches the football. But if you're a wide receiver and your job literally is, your job description is to catch the football, You're catching footballs day one.
Yeah.
You might have to learn how to be an NFL wide receiver
and
a playbook.
You're on the jugs all day.
I mean, you can either catch or you can't.
Yeah,
I mean,
true.
So why is it going to change?
But the Raiders are 3-2 right now. They're feeling themselves a little bit.
All right.
Surprisingly 3-2.
Yeah.
They're going to try anything, and they didn't give up much for him. I think it was a fifth round pick.
Yep. So. All right. The Pats part ways with tight end Benjamin Watson. This happened yesterday. Hasn't played a game this season. Now, Watson says he still wants to play in the NFL. The question is, can he? I think in the right system, you know, again, limited expectations. He's not going to run by you, but he's a good locker room guy. He's a high character person. He was never a great player, but he was good. He's reliable. He's sturdy. He's tough. He's smart. I think if you inject him within an offense with some real speed, and you're not relying on him to make plays like that, I think he'd be a decent asset.
Yeah, sure. Look, he could do it. The question I ask is why? Would he want to do this? Benjamin Watson is going to be 39 years old in December. I mean, I get it. You had a really good career. Not a Hall of Famer, but a really good career. More importantly, you're extraordinarily respected. He's going to do so many great things outside of the game. Just go ahead and get on with it. I get it, but I don't know why he would want to keep playing.
All right, the NFL Network, Ian Rappaport reported earlier, Rob Gronkowski is back. Rob Gronkowski is coming back to the NFL as an analyst. Be on the tube like us here, Tiki. So
Gronk's
Gronk is on Fox NFL Sunday. How will Gronk do on TV as an analyst?
He'll be great. I mean, it's not like he's an in-game analyst, which takes a lot of work and a lot of delivery skills.
There's no breathing room. You just have to basically,
right.
That's a tough spot.
It wouldn't fit for him, but to sit at a studio desk, and it's likely to be a fill-in. It's not going to be every week, at least not in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll be awesome because he's got such a great personality. He actually he's smart, even though we don't give him credit for being smart.
I agree.
And very aware.
Very street
so
smart, too.
I think he'll be great at it.
I think he's naturally engaging. I think he's naturally likable.
That's right.
I think he'll be terrific. Now, listen, the one comparison, you know, even though he's a former coach, you know, Rex Ryan is not translated at all.
Mm-mm.
But I do think the big difference is that, you know, I think Rex, for whatever, number one, he can't curse, and I think he's a little guarded, you know. But I also think that in his mind, he wants to coach again. So he's very
great point.
Aware of what he says. Gronk, right. I mean, if he wants to come back and play, no matter what he says, the Pats will say, okay,
yeah,
come on
right.
back. So he could just be Gronk. He'll thrive.
100%
no doubt.
Agree.
You know?
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
Segment, just, you know, like in part of the one part of the studio, just like a couch, and just basically call it the Gronk Show. Just give him a mic and let him do whatever he wants.
Oh, it'd be good. So I've seen him do like these kids shows on Nickelodeon or things like that. He's actually really like fun to watch.
He is.
He's got like physically. He's not like, I'm not comparing him to a comedian. I'm not saying that, but he's got like this physical comedy about himself.
His mannerisms.
And
his arms are flailing. He's very engaged, very animated.
He knows how to entertain.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think he'll be good on television, no matter what they decide to do with him.
If you hit the camera.
Oh, I hit it, but I hit below it.
No, but if you hit the camera, the Rays win. That's what I was about to say.
Well, good. I hope they do.
That's what
I'd love to see a game five. If the Rays do win tonight, and again, they're bullpenning this tonight. It's going to be
Castillo's going tonight to start.
Diego Castillo is starting. It's going to be really interesting, and he's only pitched, what, three and two-thirds innings he's pitched so far in this DS. But if they do win, I feel bad for it because they get Garrett Cole.
Yeah, that's a lot of spin rate waiting for you.
You're right.
It's a lot of empty trips back to the dugout as you walk with your shoulders slumped.
Exactly.
I was just messing around, looking at something if there's anything to play tonight. You know, and I don't know that I'll do this. I don't, you know, but you know, gambling is all about value. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about value. It's not so much who do you think is going to win. Of course, that's a byproduct of it, but you look for the value. That's what the sharps, that's when they parachute in late, when they try to, you know, they put money on to get Vegas to alter the lines. It's all about strategy. And if you want a little value, I don't know if this is going to happen, but if you think the Rays can pull this off tonight, right? The Rays minus a run and a half, so they'd have to win by two runs for this to come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
$100 bet wins you $400. I mean, if you think the Rays are going to win 5-2, or you want to take a flyer, Rays win 4-1, or they win 3-1, they win by more than a run and a half? $100 gets you $400. It's plus $400. Or you put 50 and you win $200.
I'd say that the Astros do win by more than a run. I want the Rays to win.
Yeah, I want to see a game five.
I want to see five.
All right.
I'd look at the over-under. I'd go over.
All right.
By 7.5, by the way.
Oh, look at Teague. Now, look at these searching lines. We will see you tomorrow. Start amping it up for week 6 already around the NFL. Wow. We'll be here for you. Hit us on Twitter at Tiki and Tierney. Enjoy the baseball. Have a great Tuesday, and we'll catch you tomorrow. Peace. Gotta go.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.